Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Hey, Aaron Flint here with Montana Talks. We are broadcasting live from beautiful Big Sky, Montana. We've got a state auditor, Montana state auditor, and a commissioner of securities and insurance, James Brown, here hosting us. Not just us, but commissioners from all across the country. Jim, great to see you as always, my friend.
Yeah, good morning, Aaron. Aaron, it's always great to be with you.
What a view this morning here, Lone Peak in the background. I mean, I tell you what, showing off Montana here for all 50 state insurance commissioners, and then also from the territories as well.
Yes, that's right. We are proud to be hosting the NAIC summer meeting here in Big Sky, Montana. We have more than 200 state insurance regulators that are gathering to engage in strategic dialogue, align in regulatory priorities, and tackle emerging issues together. And I'm always proud to show off the Treasure State to my fellow colleagues across the country.
Well, James Brown is going to be sidekicking the show with me here this morning. We've got the president of the National Association of Insurance Commissioners here with us as well. John Gottfried is the commissioner out of the great state of North Dakota, our neighboring state of North Dakota. Commissioner, good to see you.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. It's awesome to be here in Big Sky. I mean, it's absolutely gorgeous up in the mountains. So as president, I get to pick where some of these meetings go. And Medora wasn't large enough for us to host, so I couldn't bring folks in North Dakota. But absolutely, Montana's the next greatest option, and coming up to Big Sky to see the views, and the weather's always nice. So it's been a real pleasure to be here. So excited to be hosted by Commissioner Brown and get to work on some issues.
The room where everybody is meeting today, walking past it, is pretty impressive because it looks like a formal legislative body. I mean, that's the real deal going on in that room next door.
Yeah, you bring together all 56 jurisdictions, so you got all the states and all the territories to really work on issues that affect insurance. Insurance is inherently local, right? I mean, it's governed at the state level, and it's governed by our state legislators and the lawmakers in each of our states, and then overseen by the commissioner. And so this is such a great opportunity for us to come together, talk through things that are going on in other states, because they are a little bit different, but they have common threads, obviously. And these are the meetings I look forward to every year, is a couple of these a year where we can get together and really dig into the issues.
So many issues that are similar. I joke that we've got great listeners out there in the Mondakistan border region on the Montana North Dakota border. You talk about Medora, of course. We've got great listeners in the Glendive area right now as well. But so many cross-border issues. Our biggest issue at James Brown, as we've talked before, is we feel like we are paying higher prices because of California problems. And so that's one of the big things I know we as Montanans are trying to focus on, is how do we figure out how to break ourselves away to where we're not paying the prices based off of some of the decisions that are made in states like California. So my assumption is that's kind of a similar concern in other states as well.
Yeah, I think we're facing a lot of inflationary pressures across the country, right? I mean, I think you can probably tie that back to some questionable monetary policy across our country, and we're feeling the effects of that, right? And the problem is, when labor goes up 30%, materials are up 30%, everything's increasing, the thing that you're insuring is inherently going to be more expensive, right? And so that means your insurance is going to be more expensive.
Not just a wildfire and homeowners insurance, everything has gone up across the board. All right, hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break here with Montana Talks, broadcasting live from Big Sky. Each week, we are highlighting a different Montana tourism region. This week, Missouri River Country, and your chance to win a fun experience in either Glasgow or Jordan with lodging, gift cards to local businesses, gift baskets, and more. Hey, did you know 4PEC is the largest hydraulic earth-filled dam in the U.S.? It took 7 years to build. To win this year's giveaway, go to visitmt.com/giveaway. visitmt.com/giveaway.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Back to it here with Montana Talks, live from Big Sky, Montana this morning. Montana State Auditor James Brown. Jim, you know, we were talking about wildfire insurance here really briefly, and one of your fellow commissioners here is dealing with some brand new wildfires right now as we speak.
Yeah, you hit on a hot button topic that we're going to discuss here at the summer meeting of the NAIC. Our work in 2025 is going to include focusing on natural disasters and addressing the issues homeowners are facing from a consumer service and regulatory perspective. I'm very pleased to be joined here to my left, for those that are listening, by John Pike. John is the 2025 NAIC Secretary Treasurer. He is also the Commissioner of Insurance for Utah. John is no stranger to wildfire issues in Utah. John, what's it like in Utah right now?
Oh, it's sad. You know, we hate to see it happen. We know it's going to. You know, we're in the West. It's dry. It's hot. This is an unusually hot, dry summer early for us. And we've got a couple of fires in southwest Utah, right where I'm living, actually, 36 miles from St. George. It's called the Forsyth Canyon fires right near in the town of Pine Valley, Utah. It's kind of a pioneer settlement. And mostly, There are some full-timers there, but a lot of cabins, a lot of people from southern Utah and even from Nevada that hang out there and have cabins there. We've lost 13 cabins, all secondary homes. And it's just a nasty fire started by, at least they believe, started by lightning. There's not a lot you can do about that. But, you know, you can be prepared. You can focus as a state and local community on your land management. That's important in the West, of course. And so there's some efforts there that I hope will be sort of embraced more by the federal government than they have been in the past. At the state level, we tend to probably do a little bit better in terms of preparing those kinds of things and undergrowth and, you know, those kinds of things. But when it happens, there's nothing you can do except pull together. And we have 400 firefighters in that fire alone that are risking their lives every day, have been for the last 5 or 6 days. No one's been hurt. No one's been killed so far. That's what matters the most. But these things are close to our hearts right now.
Well, we've had it was interesting talking with you when you pulled into town the other day. You were met with snow. In June in Montana. That happens, right?
Oh, it sure does.
We're grateful to have the moisture, especially up in northwest Montana, where they got some moisture over the weekend as well. I think a bunch of snow over Glacier National Park. But, you know, in the last couple of years, we've had some hot, dry years, and it could have been horrible fire seasons here in Montana. But we've got a new governor and land board, or frankly across the board, that says, no, we're going to do immediate suppression on these fires. We're not just going to let them burn out of control. And so we're trying to take a more aggressive posture to stopping these fires before they burn out of control. But that's not always the case in some other states. And so, so then we get concerned, like, how can we as a state, you know, be rewarded with better insurance costs for wildfire insurance and others, and not pay the price because of what some other states might not be doing?
I think that's a really good point, and I think it's important that we, as we're working with the insurance companies, I think there needs to be proper transparency as it relates to not only as much as possible how rates are established, but how when we take time to an effort and money to mitigate risk, you know, to reduce the risk of wildfire, that we're rewarded for that in our rates.
Well, I think you're touching on an important piece there, John. This is a community-wide approach, right? And I think you touched on it, Aaron, with that it's even state by state, right? I mean, Montana can take all the precautions that it possibly can and want to, and if a neighboring state doesn't, you're still going to probably get some effects from a wildfire that can cross borders, because I don't know about wildfires, but in North Dakota, they don't stop at borders. They don't respect county lines. They don't respect any of that stuff. And so we're really focusing on an awful lot of what does it mean for community-wide resilience. And I think that, you know, we as insurance commissioners, and when you look at insurance rates and the solvency of insurance companies and all these pieces, we've got to balance all those factors. I think everybody looks at us like, well, why are rates going up? And it's like, well, because the communities aren't taking the appropriate steps that they need to take to mitigate against their own risk. And so the insurance industry is a fantastic risk signaler. And when you want to get down to mitigating that risk, that's going to take the builders, the realtors, it's going to take the county commissions and city commissions and everybody to come together and say, we need to take these steps to mitigate our risk. Those are hard conversations to have. We're talking a political third rail, and especially in North Dakota, is you want to talk building codes. I'll get every builder and home builder and realtor and everybody talking to me. I had a lovely meeting with the North Dakota Home Builders Association, and we spent a lot of time there. You know, they brought me in to talk about why are commercial rates so high, and I said, boy, I got an idea for you. Let's improve our building codes in North Dakota. Well, we don't want to do that.
And how do you do it without regulating it? James Brown, Montana's commissioner, I mean, you and I were talking kind of offline about how do we incentivize, you know, things? Because we talk about, you know, fuel reduction efforts in our federal forest lands or our state lands, but how do we maybe incentivize that from a homeowner's insurance perspective for doing fuel reduction efforts on private property even? But then the big picture is, and I think this is part of what you're talking about with some other commissioners here, which is, okay, well, even if we incentivize this to make all the good regulatory decisions in our like-minded states of Utah, North Dakota, Idaho, Montana, do we pay the price for maybe some of the coastal states?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt some of the land use policies and some of the other states impact insurance rates throughout the West, when certainly for the folks sitting here. We talked a little bit, Aaron, on the air before about how Montana did a very progressive bill in the 2025 session. It was unlawful in Montana for an insurance company to provide a rebate or allow an insurance company to provide a rebate to one of their customers for taking steps to mitigate wildfire risk on their own property. It was a great bill that got through. Insurance companies now in Montana can work with homeowners and shift the responsibility of protecting their property to.
From Mondakistan to the Flathead, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, we're back to it here in Big Sky, Montana, overlooking Lone Peak here for the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, coming in from all over the country and U.S. territories as well. Montana's state auditor and commissioner of securities and insurance, James Brown. You know, Jim, we were talking about wildfires and homeowners insurance in particular, but I feel like we also need to broaden this back out to just how the price of insurance across the board has gone up. And a lot of that because of, you know, massive federal government spending that drove up inflation across the board. And when everything costs more money, of course, it's going to cost more to insure it. But it seems like inflation is starting to be tamed. Hopefully the Federal Reserve is taking note as well, right?
Yeah, well, let's hope so. But yeah, I mean, there's a variety of factors that are causing insurance rates to grow up across the board. I think my colleagues here with us today would agree that, you know, in Montana, we're seeing all forms of insurance premiums going up. But back to the topic that we were talking about right before the break is that none of us want to be heavy-handed regulators, right? We want to incentivize the market. We want to empower consumers to take steps to mitigate costs and risk on their part. And strengthening resilience is a priority for all of us here at NAIC. I would turn to John Gottfried to talk a little bit about what states are doing in terms of the carrot instead of the stick.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. There's a number of states that have taken some pretty unique actions. Strengthen Alabama Homes, they've been around for a decade. They, you know, will give you some in a grant program to move to that next level roof, right? So in Alabama, it's you want to tie it down. You want to go to the fortified roofing standard. For North Dakota, it may look a little different, right? We don't have those type of perils that Alabama would have in the coastal states, and so our program could be different. Minnesota's got it, Oklahoma's got it. A number of our states have looked at how do we incentivize this grant program, and I'll tell you, this is a really good place for an opportunity for the federal government maybe to step in a little bit. You know, we're going to talk a little bit about FEMA at some point, I'm sure, and some of the discussions around what is the right size of FEMA. I'm really encouraged by the fact that we sat down with Chairman Flood of the House Human or Financial Services Committee, representative from Nebraska, who is a, you know, Midwesterner. He I think common sense approach to a lot of these pieces, and saying, why don't we shift some of those dollars that we're paying in post-disaster relief into pre-disaster mitigation, and allowing helping states to set up the grant programs that would work for them. Like I said, North Dakota would be different. Montana's would be different than North Dakota's. But it allow the insurance commissioner and the legislature and the lawmakers to say, okay, here are the perils we face. In North Dakota, it's wind and hail. We know how to build against wind and hail. We just don't always do it. And if we can incentivize that kind of activity, that would be a really go a long way to stabilize our insurance.
It's funny you mentioned, I think one of our callers, because we take phone calls on the show from people all across Montana, and I think it was Tim in Billings one time when the FEMA discussion came up. He says, why are we always spending a bunch of money to respond to things when we could probably spend less money preparing for things instead? Commissioner John Pike out of Utah, your thoughts?
I think that is right on. In fact, that's one of the beauties of a state-based regulatory system. We have 56 different jurisdictions who, as John Godfrey just said, they have different issues. And so a one-size-fits-all is not the case. A federal approach, therefore, I would submit, is not the wise approach. Instead, let's use those 56 jurisdictions, states and territories, as laboratories. What works for you? And let's incentivize them to mitigate, and especially when we're building new construction, to do it right the first time where it costs a lot less.
I often joke, the insurance is a state-based system, so it's governed by the state system. And when I'm up talking to people, it's like, well, save for flood insurance and maybe majority of health insurance, right? And right. In North Dakota, that's where we have our main issues, right? And that's no coincidence, in my opinion, is our property market is fairly strong and fairly stable. And when you get into life insurance, it's again, strong and stable. And all the other ancillary lines of insurance are strong and stable. When you look into health insurance and flood insurance, that's where we've got our primary issues. That a lot of our consumer complaints come in. Those are primarily federally regulated, and over time, that creep is kind of, they've kind of kept biting at the healthcare side of it. They took over the flood piece. And so, again, I think it's just a case study. And if you leave it to the states to figure this out, if you let us do what works for our states, you get a good outcome, right? And you get something that's responsive to the population that we're serving. And you can come together at the NAIC like this and share our learning, and I don't think any of us are afraid to steal somebody else's good idea, which is...
Yeah, because those lessons learned out of Florida, Alabama are useful here. Although it is kind of funny, up here in Montana, North Dakota, you could have ranchers that suffer major catastrophes or are without power, for days, and they just make it work. They just got to make it work, because that's what farmers and ranchers do. Jim Brown, back to this bigger picture topic as well, about if we just do government mandates or government regulations, whether federal or state or local, frankly. On the drive up, I had a great phone call with our friend Eigen Graf, who's a great home builder in the Bozeman area, and he's been involved with the National Association of Home Builders and the Montana Association as well. But yeah, I mean, he would tell you, what's the other, why is homeowners insurance going up? Because the price of homes is going up. So if you push these mandates down that raise the price of homes, well, you're going to make, the mandates will make things more expensive, and then your insurance is going to go up anyway. So if you force these types of things, it's not going to help. It's only going to make it worse.
Yeah, I mean, locally, Aaron, you and I both know, and the Missoula and Bozeman areas, we've seen a lot of mandates being imposed locally on builders and on housing, and of course that drives up the housing costs, and of course insurance is based on replacement value, so the more your house is worth or your property is worth, then the higher your insurance is going to be. I think it'd be a good time to have our good friend Dean Cameron, director of Idaho Insurance, step in here. He is an NAIC past president, but more importantly, he has the great honor of being my mentor at the NAIC. Welcome.
You had to do it.
That's right.
And big thanks to Commissioner Pike, John Pike out of Utah as well, from beautiful St. George, Utah. Thanks so much for your time and joining us as well. But yeah, Director Cameron, great to see you.
Glad to be here. Thanks for the invitation, and it's good to be a neighbor to Montana. And it's good to hear some of the same approaches that Montana's taken, Idaho's trying to take as well on wildfires and other issues. We're taking a much more aggressive Idaho, like Montana. We have lots of federal lands. It's frustrating because the federal government doesn't manage those lands the same level that we do at the state. They don't put out the forest fire as quickly as we would on the state lands. And so our legislature this last year actually took a more aggressive approach, where we're going to step in on those federal lands, and the federal government's going to let us. Frankly, they're looking for places to save money, as they should. Thank you, President Trump, for doing that. So we're looking forward to helping out that and avoid some of the wildfire issues that are coming. We're also looking at talking about the Alabama strengthened homes and the mitigation. Idaho's looking at doing that same thing for wildfires. So we encourage homeowners to harden their homes. We did a forum a year ago where we built two structures. The fun part was we got to light them both on fire. One of them was built with fire-hardened materials or fire-resistant materials. It never did burn. The other one burned to ground in 20 minutes, ashes in 20 minutes. And so we're able to demonstrate for very little additional cost, people can harden their homes. They can put mesh in their eaves. They can replace their shingles, replace their siding, move those juniper trees. You guys have more pine trees. Idaho seems to have a lot of juniper trees. And those things are so flammable. And people have them right up against their home. And so getting homeowners to move those, and then so we provide that incentive, that grant, if you will, to help homeowners be able to do that. That's
just a little bit of a standoff. Every fire season, it's a reminder. It's like when we talk about better management of our federal lands, that's one of the things that people can do on their own private lands as well. I mean, we've seen campgrounds that on state lands here in Montana where they did some thinning, they did some fuel reduction efforts. Fire comes through and it basically spares the campground. This was in the northwest Montana area, and then hit some of the other areas that were untreated a lot harder. And so it's just proven time and time again. If the go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say we've got evidence of that in through the fires of last year. We burnt nearly a million acres last year in Idaho, and it would burn the whole hillside, burn the whole valley, except for the homeowner who had hardened their home. So that is the solution. That is one of the solutions, is to protect your home, protect your property that way. And that's most important. And then that will also help with the insurance costs. But we also know that if we do that as a community, as a state, then that gives us as commissioners the tools to say to our industry, hey, look, we just spent $10 million reducing risk in our state. Don't come here with the same kind of increase that you're going to give California.
Idaho, like Montana, I mean, post-COVID-19, we had a lot of political refugees that fled what have been referred to as the cows, California, Oregon, Washington in particular. And I think even North Dakota has gotten some Minnesota refugees. And so, but, you know, we see where policies in some of these other states, and then even though we're moving forward in all these other areas, so how can states like Montana and Idaho potentially break apart? How do we break apart from that? Or do we need that population mass to basically help with the rates?
So for every insurance company, they're looking at it from a profitability standpoint. And so even though we don't want California fires to impact us, when they lost a bunch of money in California, it impacts us. We are getting every day insurance companies calling us, trying to decide if they're going to stay in Idaho, if they're going to stay marketing in Idaho. And we know that
because we don't have the population.
Because we don't have the population, and we still have the risk. So we have the concern. We had 91 companies in Idaho in 2023. That went down by 24 companies over this last year. So
one year you lost 24 yes, insurance companies?
And that's partially because of the inflationary aspects that President Godfrey talked about, the home values going up and the wildfire risk that's there.
The inflation combined with wildfire risk over the past few years.
So the insurance company looks at it and says, wait a minute, I don't know if I dare take on this risk. So the way to counter that is you come back and make the risk more approachable. You make it more affordable for them to be there. You help them understand why
very
they can stay.
This is very interesting. That's got me also asking the question, hey, what about Montana? What about North Dakota? And what are you hearing, President Godfrey, from the rest of the country?
This is where Montana talks at with Lane Nordlund.
In USDA's weekly crop progress report, the nation's spring wheat crop is looking decent in parts of the nation, but Montana, not looking great. USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey.
Most of the crop, 93%, has emerged. That is 4 points behind the five-year average of 97% and last year's 99%. Montana, where drought has been an issue, just 79% emerged, far behind the five-year average of 98%. And with recent rains, that may improve, but certainly it is a late start for the crop there. Spring wheat heading 17% on June 22nd, five-year average 18% last year, at this time 16%. The heading range is from 7% headed in Minnesota all the way up to 65% in Washington State. And finally, a look at spring wheat condition for the week ending June 22nd, showing 54% of the crop good to excellent, 15% very poor to poor. A week ago, we had 57% of the crop rated good to excellent, 9% very poor to poor, far below last year's numbers. This time a year ago, we were at 71% good to excellent, 4% very poor to poor. Real spotlight on Montana, where 42% of the crop currently rated in very poor to poor condition, much of that due to drought early in the growing season.
As for Montana's winter wheat condition ratings, 38% of the crop rated good, 35% fair, and 27% rated poor to very poor. I'm Lee Nordblom.
This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Let's start out on a lighter note this time around. James Brown basically serving as host here as the Montana host for the summer meeting for the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. I had to give President Godfrey a hard time here. I said, you came from North Dakota and you didn't bring any lefse, but he did. He does have a recipe for us, though. He's got a recipe for
us. Family secret,
you know. Yeah. And he's not one of those blasphemers that puts cinnamon and sugar on his lefse. It's only butter and sugar. Right?
It's the only way to go.
That's the only way to go. Do you play whist as well, by the way?
I have been known to be a pretty mean whist player with, Thanksgiving and Christmas. You get around the table and you play a little bit of that with my parents. And I haven't played in a little while, but wow, that's a little bit of a callback.
Oh, man.
I love it.
So, yeah, you know, being a kid in Northeast Montana, and we would have buses come from North Dakota and Minnesota for whist tournaments in Glasgow when I was a kid. Yep. And we'd have 6-7 tables going at our Thanksgiving. Always had fun, but James Brown's got to be fun, kind of just talking to folks from all over the country, kind of all over the world, with the territories in the house as well here.
Yeah, that's a good lead. A couple things. If you were in this room, you'd understand what a huge man President Godfrey is. So whist isn't the only thing he played.
He's about 7 feet tall.
Yes, he is. Yeah. He was also an NCAA basketball player and actually played in the NCAA tournament. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, I got to play in 2 years in the NCAA tournament. We lost to Georgia Tech with Jarrett Jack and Luke Century. He's another 7-foot Australian guy with red hair, and I also remember his guarding him. I'm like, God, he's just all limbs. I can't get around him. And I imagine that's how people feel when they're guarding me, but it's just he was massive. And then we played against Wisconsin the next year, and in both games we lost by 5. We had the shot we wanted to have at the end of the game to win it and just didn't make it. We got the open shot, and it's just one of those things, but it was a really good experience. I'd say my claim to fame right now and what was really playing well in the third and fourth grade classes in Bismarck, North Dakota, is that I'm also the world record holder. I'm the world's tallest elected official. I'm in the book. It's a thing that wasn't a thing until it was a thing. I've got friends all over the country who a Brooklyn City councilman was named the world's tallest politician. And I got so many phone calls and texts saying, you got to take this back. This is crappy. You're way taller than this guy. And next thing I know, I'm down the road with the Guinness World Record folks. And you got to get measured and, you know, standing and sitting down or standing and laying down 3 times a day. My attorney general was my witness for all that. And
that's
it's like you said.
Did you go on one of those tables where you lay upside down to stretch out a little further?
You know? No, it's amazing. Throughout the course of the day, you shrink as the weight of the world kind of pushes down on you. But it was a fascinating process. I found out how they make their money. Guinness does. They called and said, we'd love for you to apply. It's if you pay us $6,500, we'll do it in 2 weeks.
Whoa.
And I'm like, I don't really care that much. How much is it just to do it for the non-caring? And they're like, well, it'll be about 12 to 18 weeks and you don't have to pay anything. I'm like, that's the kind of speed that I like. And so,
yeah, to paint the picture for the size of this guy, who's the president of the NAIC, our Glendive listeners would remember the late, great, former MSU extension agent in Dawson County, Big Bruce, who was always at the Glendive Agri-Trade Expo. And I walked out, I was like, man, he's big like old Big Bruce there. So, yeah, it's great to see you. Back to Director Campbell. James Brown, maybe kick off the next conversation, because, when he was talking about what 24, Director Cameron, who's the director of, out of the state of Idaho, when he talked about they lost, 24 insurance companies, so inflation combined with wildfire risk,
24 insurance companies just got out of the market in Idaho. I'd be really be interested in hearing what you're hearing, not only Montana, North Dakota, but really across the country in a similar regard.
Yeah, fortunately here in Montana, I'm not seeing the kind of market exit that Dean Cameron is seeing in Idaho. We have had a notification from several companies that they are pulling out of the market. What we're really seeing in Montana, particularly in terms of homeowners insurance, is non-renewals. People are being notified across the state, like we've talked about, Aaron, that several of these insurance companies are just not going to offer homeowners insurance in certain areas of the state.
So the company's there, but the policy isn't.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's still about 70 companies in Montana that offer homeowners insurance, so I don't feel like we have a competition problem, but we certainly have a cost problem that we've talked about. You know, thank God we're getting a handle now on inflation, but the market is catching up. I think both of my colleagues here would agree with that from the rising costs over time for the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I think on a national perspective, it's been fascinating to watch some of the different actions taken by different states, right? Like, you look at Florida. Florida was in an availability crisis, right? There, everybody was leaving. That was the headline news of, oh, my God, the Florida insurance market's collapsing. Well, they went in and reformed their tort reform laws and kind of looked at their legal abuse, the legal system abuse. And I'll tell you, they were the only state, I think, this year that had a rate reduction. And so it just goes to show, again, you can overregulate in this space. You can regulate companies out of the market, and they can use whatever excuse they want to use to say, you know, whatever fits for the narrative that they're trying to say. They can say, well, you know, the hurricane risk is too much, the wildfire risk is too much, or whatever. But I think when you look at, you look at what Florida took, the actions that they took, and companies are going back into Florida because you remove that litigation abuse threat. And it's not an issue that we have in North Dakota. I don't think you guys have I'm sure you have similar tort laws that we have. And so we've been very proactive on that front. But you look at, again, there are spaces in this country where if they were to take some legal reform efforts or tort reform efforts, that could really open up that market. And that's certainly one thing we're going to talk about this week a little bit here. But it's fascinating to look at the different regulatory schemes that other states have and then their responses to it. And Florida took some very, very aggressive, very proactive stance to say, we got to get this litigation abuse under control because that's what's really hurting our companies.
Yeah. Back to Director Cameron out of Idaho. So, you know, now that inflation seems to be getting tamed, you know, it's interesting. President Trump's really been going after Fed Reserve Chairman Powell for saying, hey, look at these economic numbers. Look at the latest inflation numbers consecutive now. Why aren't you lowering interest rates? I wonder from an insurance perspective, okay, now that with inflation getting more under control, of course, it's hard to peel back all the damage that was done over the last few years in particular, but in similar regard, like calling on the Fed to now bring interest rates under control, how can we help ensure that insurance companies also bring some of this stuff under control as well?
Yeah, so
from a consumer standpoint.
Yeah, in our perspective in Idaho and similar in Montana and other, this is why I like the leadership that you've had here this morning. Is our goal is to lead and show the rest of the country how to do it in the right way without the heavy hand. We look at some of our friends in California and Colorado and Oregon. They're a much more heavy-handed approach, and it is counterintuitive. It doesn't really work. Ours is a much more friendly approach where we work with the insurance industry. When I said a minute ago that we had 24 companies leave, many of them didn't leave physically the state. Some of them are still offering auto insurance, but they're no longer offering homeowners insurance, or they're non-renewing people. And so what we do is we sit down with the companies and we try and talk them through it. We try and show with them. I think Alabama was the other state that had a rate reduction. They were able to do the rate reduction because of their mitigation program, because they provided the grants. Now, last I heard, they're still having hurricanes down in the southeastern part of the country, and yet their rates were going down because they mitigated against it. They provided that. And so one of our roles, besides trying to protect the consumer, one of our roles is working with the insurance industry and helping them understand how the risks that they're seeing isn't as bad as they think it is. Because it's really easy for them to get one picture of the West
yeah.
and say, oh, here's what's going on in the West. Therefore,
this is the rate we have to apply.
Montana alone, if you go from one corner of Montana to the other, it's like driving from Chicago to Washington, D.C. But you're right. But then not only do we treat Montana the same as we might California, but the entire West. A couple minutes here before our next quick break here, and whoever wants to jump in on this one, I talked about California, Oregon, Washington. We've talked about California in particular. What would they say if they were here right now on this same conversation, would you say, about, you know, wildfire insurance or just insurance in general?
You know, one of the interesting things is in many cases, they have started replicating what we're doing. So Colorado's now and California now has introduced a bill to provide mitigation. They do take a harder approach on regulating the companies, which causes companies to leave. You talk about companies exiting California. That's been the case there, and certainly in Colorado.
Yeah, and you're getting a lot of refugees from all those three states that now live in Idaho, too, so like we've seen here.
I think the other thing, they focus a lot on climate and climate resiliency, and we have been, as an organization, trying to collaborate together to help kind of pull them off of their edge and help bring forth policies that actually will work.
That kind of reminds me of that. Was it a Paul Simon song? You can call me Betty. Betty, when you call me, you can call me out. Call it climate resiliency. Call it fuel reduction. Just clean up the stinking forests and fight the fires. Either way, right? Okay, hold that thought. Shortest break of the hour right now. I want to talk about international issues right after this and how that affects insurance markets.
Talk 970 and 103.3 FM KBUL, your home for Fox News, Hannity, and Montana Talks with Aaron. Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, wrapping up our program here from the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, a national meeting here in Big Sky, Montana. You know, James Brown, Montana State Auditor. We should also mention, we heard all this great talk about basketball from the president, John Gottfried, here on North Dakota. Some people might be saying, where did he play? Well, he started at the University of Utah, the Utes, and then Northern Iowa. So we were, of course, talking about the great pie pizzeria place down down right there, right off the Ute campus. But international regulation, international markets. Jim, we've talked, NAIC is a bipartisan organization, but, a big topic in the news that we've talked about is DEI policies, call them woke policies, whatever you want, ESG-style regulations, where they try to use investment, they try to push environmental, social, governance rules into investment decisions. Well, then that starts playing a role in insurance markets. And even if forget the Western states trying to be Western, it's about the United States also being sheltered from what the Europeans might be trying to force on the United States as well, right?
Yeah, that's right. Good lead-in on the where John played his collegiate ball, because he also told us he played in Germany, so he has a international flavor in that regard. So, both John and Dean have represented NAIC on international stage, along with the NAIC Sophisticated International Insurance Committee. John has certainly talked about the fact that in the U.S., insurance is still a state-based regulatory scheme, but NAIC does try to represent the United States in international insurance matters. And so I'll start with you, Dean. How about telling us more about the impact NAIC plays on the international level?
Yeah, you bet. You know, one of the things that I know in Idaho, I'll have citizens say to me, well, why in the world are we involved on the international level? What's the cause? Well, first of all, many of our insurance companies are now owned by international companies. You take, for example, Farmers Insurance. You think it's a U.S. company owned in Zurich. Okay. Most of our insurance companies buy reinsurance, and that reinsurance comes from international companies, mostly either out of Bermuda, Swiss Re out of Switzerland, Zurich Re, Lloyd's of London. So all of those companies we have to deal with in order to help keep rates down for insurance companies so that we can keep rates down for our insureds, for our consumers. So it's become really, really important for us to be involved. It's also important if we vacate the stage, we're not at the table. What's the old axiom? If you're not on the table, you might be on the menu.
Yeah.
And so for us, we want to be at the table so that we make sure we can put forth those appropriate non-regulatory conservative principles that help us regulate the market.
And where this really plays an important role is in capital generation, right? I mean, and so to put it in perspective, the United States makes up about half of the world's insurance market, right? So having us at the table is not only critically important, but it's critically important for us so they don't start pulling us in different directions that maybe we don't want to go. To Dean's point, if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And so I would agree. I think one of the first things that I learned in my 8 years here is like, well, it is really important to play this international role. You want to talk about an area where we're misunderstood, it's probably at that international table. A lot of our international colleagues are very bank-centric, so they're very much focused on liquidity, right? So we've got to be focused on liquidity risk and what's that run. If a bank run happens, what's that look like, right? Insurance has a much different makeup, right? We've got much longer tails. We've got much more ability to absorb some of these ups and downs. And so when you look at capital regulation and capital generation, and one of my key priorities this year is look at how do we unleash some of that in the United States. Like we do a very good job of it compared to our international colleagues, but we can probably do better. And if you can generate more capital in industry, that helps put downward pressure on those rates. And so it gets a little nuanced, it's a little technical, but I'll tell you, we've been fighting that fight at the international stage for a number of years because they want to pull us into more of a bank style centric regulatory scheme because that's what they understand. And we're sitting there saying, no, you've decimated your life insurance industry. You've decimated a lot of your industries in Europe and other places. That's not a good model we want to follow. It's almost like if we can't have a good industry, we don't want you to have a good industry, so we want to share the pain. And so I'll give Dean a lot of credit and a lot of the folks who spend a lot of time internationally fighting that fight. It can be an exhausting battle because you're running against folks who don't understand our system, don't recognize the ability to incentivize capital development and what that just means, not only for the insurance industry, but for the real economy, right? I mean, we're seeing a lot of growth in this country, and banks have stepped away from a lot of those investments, right? The private equity pieces and some of those pieces. And so it's naturally shifting the insurance industry, and we've got to be ready to pick that up because that's going to help move not only our economy here in the United States forward, but also the global economy. And so,
and you mentioned banks. That's got me thinking of the very important topic of debanking. I mean, we've seen where, okay, well, we don't think we can get the government to take away your guns, so we'll just take away the insurance for your gun business, or we'll take away the banking opportunities for your gun business. And so that's why there's concern about the Europeans having too much control over insurance domestically. I mean, forget just Washington, D.C. having control. This is Europeans because now, well, we've seen how they're moving against cattle ranching in Europe. Well, what if they want to move against cattle ranchers in America? Oh, well, we don't like the timber industry. Oh, well, we don't like the Second Amendment that you have in your country. So we're going to figure out a way to European-style control some of this stuff vis-a-vis our power over the insurance markets.
Yeah, and I think that's the really important reason why we've got to have a loud voice at that table, right? Again, we represent half of the global market.
All right, that winds up our time for today. I'll be back in the studio for Wednesday's show, and I think we got a couple of things we could talk about. I think we'll figure out something to talk about on Wednesday.